श्री चैतन्य मनोविष्ट स्थापित येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदाम दधाति स्वपदान्तिक। हरे कृष्णा, वेलकम बैक टू द लास्ट क्लास ऑफ आवर भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स। We'll be discussing chapter 19 of the Nectar of Devotion. So before we go into the chapter, let's once have a overview or a review of the journey that we have gone through in the Nectar of Devotion. Let's look at the Eastern Wave or the Eastern Ocean. So it is called as Bhagavad Bhakti Bhed, the varieties of devotional service. So among the four sides of the ocean, we are covering in our Bhakti Shastri course this Eastern Ocean only. So in this, the first wave was Samanya Bhakti. Samanya Bhakti is overview of devotional service. This was introduction and chapter 1 of the Nectar of Devotion. That introduction in chapter 1 means that we discussed the introduction and then the six characteristics of pure devotional service. So Klesha Agni, Shubhada, all those things are the part of Samanya Bhakti. Then the second wave was Sadhana Bhakti, devotional service and practice. This was chapters 2 to 16. This was the major part of our course. So in this, we start from the first stages of devotion and eligibility of the candidate for accepting devotional service. And then we discussed about how devotional service, this is primarily a set of quotes. This is about how bhakti is independent of everything else. And then from here onwards, the 64 description of the 64 elements starts. From 6th chapter onwards, and it goes on till 13. Almost till 14 also. 14 devotional qualifications basically deals with the relationship of bhakti with other elements which have not been included in the 64 items. Then these two, 15 and 16, these two talk about raga anuga bhakti. So that is, so in sadhana bhakti, there are two parts. There is vaidhi bhakti and raga anuga bhakti. So 2 to 14 chapters are talking about vaidhi bhakti. And 15 and 16 are talking about raga anuga bhakti. So both of them are parts of, all of them are parts of 15 and 16, they are parts of vaidhi bhakti. Now from here onwards, 17 and 18, which we discussed in our previous class, they are a part of the third wave. The third wave is called as bhava bhakti, that is devotional service in ecstasy. So this three stages of bhakti, sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti and prem bhakti, they form the second, third and fourth waves of the Eastern Ocean. So now bhava bhakti we discussed in our previous chapter. Now we are going to the fourth wave. Fourth wave is prema bhakti, devotional service in love of God. This is called chapter 19 in the Nectar of Devotion. This is devotional service in pure love of God. Now the description in chapter 19 is not very detailed because prema and bhava are similar. Prema is basically a developed stage of bhava. So whatever analysis is given for bhava applies, is in many ways similar to the analysis that is required for prema. So now Prabhupada starts this by describing, when one's desire to love Krishna in one particular relationship becomes intensified, this is known as pure love of Godhead. So this is pure love of Godhead. Now let's look at this from the point of view of our discussion in this chapter. We'll look at the definition of prema over here. So devotion, fourth wave, prema bhakti, devotion is love of God. So let's look at the definition that Rupa Goswami gives. Samyan mashrinita swanto mamatvati shayankitaha bhavas eva sandratma budhai prema nigadyate. So budhai prema nigadyate. Budhai means the wise, nigadyate means to call or describe. They call this to be prema. What is that prema? So samyan masrinata bhanto. That means samyan means completely. Samyak, here when the sandhi happens, it becomes samyan. Masrinata, completely, when the heart softens. In bhava, the heart is soft, but in prema, the softening is complete. Then the swanta, swanta in one's inside is completely soft. And mamatva atishayankitaha. Mamatma means a sense of ownership. We'll discuss what this means. It's a very significant point. Atishayankitaha. Atishayankitaha means atishay is a lot or abandoned. Ankitaha. Ankita is marked. So that which is marked with a lot of feeling of intense emotion, and bhavas eva sandratma. So bhava, sandratma, we discuss what it means. It means condensed or concentrated. So budhai prema nigata, this is called prema. So when that bhava softens the heart, samyan masrinata swanto, and softens the heart completely, and then what happens to bhava? Becomes endowed with strong feelings of possessiveness in relationship with the Lord. Mamatva atishankitaha, it's marked with intense feeling of possessiveness and becomes very condensed and intensified. See, this is sa eva sandratma. It is called prema by learned scholars. This is Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 23.7. Budhai prema nigadyate. This is called as prema. So now in this definition, let's look at again the characteristics of this definition, the primary and the secondary characteristics. Samyan masrunata swanto. So Prabhupada writes about this. Then now in his Nectar of Devotion, in the Narad Pancharatra, it is clearly stated that when lust is transferred to the Supreme Godhead and the concept of kinship is completely reposed in him, such as accepted as pure love of God by great authorities like Bhishma, Prahlad, Uddhava and Narada. So Narad Pancharatra, it says that when what is happening is the lust is, there is a famous prayer of Bhaktivinoda Thakur where he says, that my dear Lord, just as the very intensity with which my mind is attracted to the sense objects, let my mind now be attracted to you. So that is, we also discussed one prayer earlier about how a man is attracted to a woman and a woman to a man. Similarly, let me be attracted to you. So this is actually the principle of devotion. In fact, the principle of pure devotion. So actually our material emotions are distortions of our original pure spiritual emotions. So what we have to do is we have to draw our emotions back, but we can't just draw them back. We cannot live emotionless. So we direct our emotions towards Krishna. And when this redirection happens completely, then that is pure love of God. And Prabhupada further quotes Bhishma over here. According to Bhishma, love means reposing one's affection completely upon one person, withdrawing all affinities from any other person. So it is reposing one's affection completely upon one person. Now earlier we discussed that affection for Krishna is not exclusivist, it's not narrow-minded. Because sometimes if I say I love you and then I say I don't love anyone else except you, that would mean that to love you I have to cut out everyone else from my love circle. So that may happen if we love somebody in this world. But when we love Krishna, because Krishna is connected with everyone, in fact Krishna intimately loves everyone, therefore when we love Krishna, our love flows through Krishna to everyone. But the focus is that we have to focus our love on Krishna, and through Krishna the love goes to everyone else. So that's why we see Bhishma, he was very considerate towards not just the Pandavas, but you know, he was also considerate towards Duryodhana. He tried to give him good advice and tried to get him as much as possible to get him on the right track. So in that sense, a devotee is not insensitive. A devotee is very sensitive about various issues and tries to deal with them properly. And I mean, as if, because his love doesn't get divorced from everything else. So now in this, the primary characteristic is bhava sa eva sandratma. That the what is it? It is when bhava becomes condensed and intensified, it is prema. It's prema. And so it's very intense feeling of love. And then what is the secondary characteristics? What I described earlier, that samyan masrinata swanta. Samyan, complete softening of the heart, complete softening of the heart. So in that sense, it is, and again the same point is made, it is intensification of bhava. But the other point is very significant over here. Mamatva atishayankitaha. Mamatva atishayankita. This is a significant point. There are two modes of relationship, or two moods, which will also lead to modes, two moods in the relationship, which is based on tadiyatva and mamatva. Tadiyatva means that, my dear Lord, I am yours, tadiyatva, I am yours. This is a very, this is itself an exalted level of surrender, where one thinks, we think I am my own person. You know, I will do what I want to do. I am free. I am independent. Now, that feeling is, it's okay. In one sense, the modern or postmodern thoughts may like celebrate that kind of feeling. But beyond that, when one says that, that is not a feeling which is conducive to devotion. Now, that is the feeling which is conducive to bondage and a continued existence, material existence, because we want to be connected with Krishna constantly. Therein is the perfection of our existence. Because in being independent, we may have a feeling of freedom, but we will not have a feeling of fulfillment. Fulfillment comes by the reciprocation of love. And for that, we have to have relationships. And relationships means there has to be subordination. Even in this world, when people say, no, I fall in love. We fall in love here, fall in love. People don't stand in love. They fall in love. Why? Because there has to be, whenever there is a loving relationship, there has to be subordination. So, tadiyatva means, my dear Lord, I'm yours. So, we see this, manasa deho geho jokichu mumar, arpilu tuapade nandakisho. So, like that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and other acharyas are saying that, my dear Lord, everything, I am yours and everything that I have is yours. This is tadiyatva. This is an exalted level of surrender. But higher than that is mamatva. Not just that I am yours, my dear Lord, you are also mine. You are mine. What that means is mamatva. You are mine. And not just you are, I am yours, but you are mine. So, mamatva. How does that work out? Yashoda Mai, she certainly, it's implied that I am yours, my dear Lord. She does say that I am yours. But beyond that, it also implies that mamatva means that you are mine. So, Yashoda Mai thinks Krishna is my child. Not only is my child, he's actually, I have to take care of him. He's mine. So because she thinks he's my child, so she has to, you know, he has to be well behaved. He cannot just go around stealing from anyone and everyone. He steals butter. What will happen to his reputation? It's very bad. So that mamatva is a very elevated stage of love. And here we will see, generally we think of possessiveness as bad. So many times in the Bhagavad Gita, Nirmamo nirhankara sashanti madhigachyati. Bhagavad Gita says so many places. So that vihaya kama niha sarvan humamscherati nispruha nirmamo nirhankara sashanti madhigachyati. So in 2.71 he says nirmamo nirhankara. Give up the feeling of mama, of possessiveness. So there are two modes of our illusion. One is the possessiveness and the other is the misidentification, ahankara. So that the things connected with the body are mine and I am the body. So me and my, aham mameti. So now, normally mamatva is considered to be very bad as far as the normal understanding of spiritual life is concerned, and mamatva has to be given up. But when we come to a very evolved understanding of spiritual life, actually whatever emotions are there in the material world, they are distortions, and we want to give up the distortions, but the way to give up the distortions is by not just rejecting them but reverting them to their original forms. And that reversion to their original forms is by purification and by the process of devotional service. So when that mamatva is directed towards Krishna, it makes the relationship very sweet and intimate. You know, Radharani thinks that Krishna is my Lord. And that's why if she sees that, she comes to know from some of her gopis that Krishna is with Chandravali, then she gets angry with Krishna. Later on when Krishna comes, she's angry. She says, if you want to be with her, don't come here then. So what is this? This is possessiveness for Krishna. And this is very pleasing to Krishna. This mamatva indicates a very exalted level of love of God. And it indicates, most importantly, that one has got a personal relationship with God. It's not just based on a personal and intimate relationship with God. when we think of God in sense of greatness, we think, oh, God is all powerful, God is all great, all kind, and I just have to offer myself to Him. That is tadiyatva. But mamatva is much deeper, where, okay, God is all powerful, all great, but God is my beloved, and we have a relationship, and in that relationship there is a feeling of possessiveness, and not just possessiveness, atishayankita is intense possessiveness. In fact, we see the Rath Yatra festival, where the gopis, what are they doing? They are taking Krishna back to Vrindavan. That is the mood of the Rath Yatra festival. From Kurukshetra, where the gopis have met Krishna, is the, in their vision they have made a cart, and they are pulling Krishna back. So what is the underlying sentiment behind it? No, Krishna belongs to Vrindavan. Krishna belongs to us, the Vrajavasis, and we want Him back in Vrindavan. So there we have, there is mamatva. Now, in mamatva, tadyatva is not rejected. Tadyatva is present, but it is subordinated. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in one of the songs says, Amita tumara, tumito amara, kikaja paradhane. So he says, Amita tumara, I am yours, my dear Lord. That is tadyatva. I offer myself completely to you. But then the relationship with Krishna is not just one-sided. For the relationship to be truly relishable, it is both-sided. So, amito tomara, then tumito amara, that you are all mine. You are mine, and when I have you, what do I need anything else for? You are the supreme possession. Kikaja aparadhane. He says, aparadhan, what other dhan, what other wealth do I need apart from you? So devotee is never poverty stricken. Even when a devotee has nothing materially, he has Krishna. And Krishna is the supreme possession. So that way, a devotee is supremely wealthy in that sense. So that mamatva, possessiveness, is a very exalted and intimate feeling of property, almost like proprietorship over the Lord. But that is the nature of love. When love is there, it's not proprietorship in the sense of wanting to restrict the freedom of someone else or wanting to dominate someone else, but it is more in the sense of loving sense of mutual belonging. So I belong to you, you belong to me. And that's how the love becomes very intimate and intense. So tadiyatva atishayankitaha. Now let's move forward. Now, if you want to look at this further, there are two ways of achieving prema. One is by the maturation of bhava, and the second is by the Lord's extraordinary mercy. So here this is depicted diagrammatically. So prema can come by mercy, that is krupa, and it can come from bhava. So mercy is completely causeless, and mercy is causeless, and so it will just lead directly over there. And bhava, now we discussed earlier, bhava can come from vaidhi and raganuga, and accordingly the prema can be called as vaidha bhavottha and raganugya bhavottha. Raganugya bhavottha. So that means what? From vaidhi to bhava, and then from there one has come to prema, and then from raganuga to bhava, and from there to prema. So in that way, both ways one can come to prema. So this Srila Prabhupada describes, from vaidhi, a devotee in the course of executing the regulated principle of devotional service develops his natural Krishna consciousness, thus becomes softened at heart, chants and dances like a madman. And while performing chanting of the holy name, he sometimes cries, sometimes talks wildly, sometimes sings, and sometimes, without caring for any outsider, dances like a madman. So, evam vrata swapriya nama kirtya. It's a famous verse in the 11th canto. The Prabhupada is paraphrasing this verse over in the Nodi. This has been quoted by Rupa Goswami. Swapriya nama kirtya, and then glorifies the Lord. And what is the mood in glorifying? Loka bahaya. One doesn't care for anyone else. He's completely intoxicated, maddened by love of God. And such sort of intoxication, maddening, is the perfection of love of God. Now, with this perfection of love of God, what happens is the devotee doesn't care for anything else. And this is the vaidhi bhavottha. So Vaidhi Bhavata means through Vaidhi Bhakti one gets to Bhava and then one gets to Prema. And while we were discussing about Bhava, we discussed a couple of points which I would like to refer back, and then we'll move forward in the to Raganuga Bhavata. Sometimes we discussed about how some devotees may feel spiritual emotions. So if a young sadhaka feels spiritual emotions, then and that person has not had any contact with devotional service, has not even done sadhana bhakti, is just a very new and is exhibiting symptoms of ecstasy, what does that mean? That means that is coming from previous lives. And the person has done some sadhana in the previous life, and that's how just continuing on. Purvabhyasinitena iva riyate yavashopi, Krishna says 6.44. One is helplessly attracted because of one's past practice. So that is one way that can happen. Now when we are talking about this bhav, they say sadhana, bhakti, bhav and prema, we understand that this is a multiple lifetime process. By kripa it can happen in one moment, but a devotee doesn't depend on or demand kripa. Even when there is kripa, there is endeavor. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that and the normal process for getting a PhD is that one has to go start from junior KG and from the kindergarten level and then go through primary, secondary, then college and then doctorate, and then one may get a PhD and then postgraduate and then graduate, then one gets a PhD, a doctorate degree. Now there might be some other person who does some extraordinary performance. Somebody writes some novel which becomes immensely popular, which becomes globally acclaimed, and then because of that, maybe that novel gets a Nobel Prize in literature, and so many universities come and start giving honorary PhDs in literature or something like that for that writer. Now that is an exceptional thing. Now one cannot, an ordinary student cannot think, oh, I will get an honorary PhD. And then that person will get no honor, they will only get a dishonor, no PhD at all. So one cannot expect like that. One has to endeavor. So Krupa is also one way one can get to perfection, but a devotee does not depend on or demand Krupa as the only factor in perfection. The devotee endeavors. Devotee follows sadhana bhakti sincerely, and by that the devotee shows Krishna, Krishna, I want your mercy, I beg for your mercy. That means when we are practicing bhakti, it is not our bhakti that is leading to spiritual advancement. It is Krishna's mercy that is leading to spiritual advancement. But along with that, our endeavor is also important. Just like we have discussed, person has fallen in a well, then it is the person outside who is pulling out from the well, but along the time one has to hold on. So one holds on to the well and then the other person pulls out of the well. So like that one can move forward and make spiritual advancement. So one doesn't depend only on kripa. And sometimes when we see other devotees very advanced spiritually, what we understand is that they have done endeavor in their previous lives. So we should not be trying, that is not the mood of a devotee. It should not be trying to evade endeavor and trying to demand mercy. Now that is the mood of a business. In business, the idea is that, suppose I want to purchase something and bargain. Bargaining means what? I want to get as much valuable product as possible and I want to give as less money as possible. So the business dealing is give as less as possible and get as much as possible. But that is not the devotee's mood. If we think, oh, I will not do any endeavor, but Krishna give the mercy and then I will get everything by that, then that mood is non-devotional. Now, earlier we have seen how by the mercy of a devotee one can get bhava. We discussed about harda or vachika or darshandana. By Krishna's mercy or devotee's mercy, one can get that. One can get to bhava. And then we think, why don't devotees do that to me? I'll just go and stand in front of Krishna and Krishna will give me darshan and I'll get bhava. Why doesn't it happen? It can happen if Krishna wants, but demanding that is not the mood of devotion. It is the mood of basically commerce. It is the mood of business. I want to give as less as possible and get as much as possible. The devotee's mood is to give everything of oneself, because that is the nature of love. If we are not habituated to giving everything of what we have, then love itself will not have much meaning. Love means that we don't hold things back. Love means we offer ourselves completely to Krishna, and Krishna also reciprocates by filling our heart with more love than it can hold, and that love floods over and fills our life completely with ecstasy. So that's why a devotee does not demand mercy. A devotee strives and endeavors. So now Vaidhi Bhavottama is there, Bhavotta is there, and similarly there is Raganuga Bhavotta. That means one practices Raganuga Bhakti. So basically there is Sadhana Bhakti, there is Bhava Bhakti, and there is Prema Bhakti. So we discussed earlier the path from Sadhana Bhakti to Bhava Bhakti, there are two ways, from Vaidhi Sadhana and from Raganuga Sadhana. So similarly, the paths from, you could say that the roadways that come over here, if instead of having it like two roadways coming here, you can have two roadways coming here, and the same roadway continues over here. So from Sadhana Bhakti, if one goes up by Vaidhi Sadhana, then one comes to Raganuga, and then one comes to Bhava Bhakti, and from Bhava Bhakti one moves forward and comes to Prema. And similarly, another road from Sadhana Bhakti, one is taking the road of Raganuga Bhakti. So the same Raganuga Bhakti road moves forward, and then one comes to Raganuga Bhavotta Prema. So through Raganuga to Bhava, and then from there to Prema. Now this is the pathways to Prema, but along with the pathways to Prema, there are types of Prema, there are types of love. Let's look at what are the types of love now. So before we move forward to the types of love, here the example for Bhava through Vaidhi Bhakti we discussed. Now let us look at the example of Raganuga Bhavotta. So Rupa Goswami continues the example of Chandrakanti from Padma Puran. So it's described that one night that she danced in the mood of the gopis. She was doing Raganuga Chandrakanti, practice Raganuga Bhakti, striving to develop the mood of the Ragatmikas of Vrindavan, specifically the gopis. Then she achieved Virakti by that, became completely different from everything else. And by maturation of her Bhava Bhakti, she began to constantly engage in my meditation on Krishna's form with the concept of Krishna is my lover. Thus, this is Mamatva, and it is a symptom of Prema. And then Prabhupada, here it is quoted by, about Prema achieved by Kripa, as Krishna tells Uddhava in 11:12:17 about the gopis. How did the gopis get pure love of God? The gopis of Vrindavan did not study the Vedas to achieve me, nor had they ever been in holy places of pilgrimage, nor did they ever devoutly execute principles, nor did they undergo any austerity. It is simply by my association that they have attained the highest perfection of devotional service. So now we may say, actually aren't the gopis Nitya Siddha? Haven't the gopis descended from the spiritual world to the material world? Yes, they have, but not all gopis. There are different, there are many different categories of gopis. Like as earlier we discussed about the Rishicharya gopis, those who were rishis in Dandakaranya, and then they appeared in Krishna Lila later on. So like that, there are different kinds of gopis. And some gopis, they participated in Krishna Lila, and thereby by participating in Krishna Lila, they attained perfection. So when Krishna calls gopis to perform the Ras Lila, not all gopis are able to come immediately. They experience obstacles, but different gopis are able to break free from the obstacles at different times. And some gopis who are not able to break free from the obstacles, they become desperate and they meditate on the Lord and desperately long to be in the presence of the Lord. And that longing burns away all their impurities. So the gopis come out at different times. Not all gopis are in the same category. So here it is referring to those gopis who may not have had love of God earlier, but just by the association of Krishna, they develop love of God. Now here, we go to Vrindavan as a place of pilgrimage. Then why is it said that in this verse, Krishna telling Uddhava, the gopis did not go to any place of pilgrimage? Weren't they living only in the place of pilgrimage, that is Vrindavan? Yes, they are living in a place of pilgrimage. But the gopis don't think of Vrindavan necessarily as a place of pilgrimage. For them, it's just the home, the place they were born in. So when it is said the gopis didn't go to a place of pilgrimage, what it essentially means is that the gopis did not practice the rituals of dharma too much. That it was not that some people, for the sake of purification, they go to Tirtha Yatra, okay, I'll go to this place, I'll go to that place, I'll go to that place. The gopis were not going around like that. The gopis were born in Vrindavan and they were living in Vrindavan. So what made them exalted was the association of Krishna. They were so spontaneously, they were so deeply attracted to Krishna, and by the attraction to Krishna, they developed more and more love of God till they attained perfection. So for them, the qualification was the mercy of Krishna. By the mercy of Krishna, the gopis developed spontaneous love for Krishna. Now moving forward, let's look at the two types of prema. So there is Mahatmya Jnana and Kevala. Mahatmya Jnana is prema mixed with knowledge of the Lord's Majesty, and Kevala is unmixed, pure prema. So Prabhupada writes that prema can be placed in two headings. One is profound veneration for the greatness of the Lord, and the other is one's being automatically attached to Krishna without any extraneous consideration. So profound veneration, that is Mahatmya Jnana, and Kevala is unmixed pure prema. So now let's look at this once again. So now what happens is, from Vaidhi Bhakti, if one moves forward, so these are three stages of prema. The Sadhana Bhakti, there is Bhava Bhakti, and there is Prema Bhakti. So normally, if somebody practices Vaidhi Bhakti, then from there one will come to Vaidhi Bhavotta, and from there one will get to Mahatmya Jnana. Similarly, if one practices Raganu Bhakti, then one goes to Raganu Bhavotta, and one goes to Kevala. This is the progression which happens normally. Of course, Krishna's mercy, anything is possible. Now, Prabhupada quotes from Narada Pancharatra, as Rupa Goswami is doing, that if on account of profound veneration for the greatness of the Supreme Lord, one attains a great affection and steady love for Him, one is certainly assured of achieving the four kinds of liberation. So, Mahatmya Jnana. Mahatmya Jnana means that awareness of God's greatness. And there is love over there, but that love is with an awareness of Krishna's greatness. Now, if we see in the Damodar Leela, what is happening is Krishna is being bound by a devotee, that is Yashoda Mai. And for a devotee who is in the Mahatmya Jnana Prema, this is inconceivable. Now, how can you bind God? Now, God is the supreme object of love. You can't bind God. You have to be very respectful to God. But in Satyavrata Muni only, when he is describing this, he's describing how Yashoda Mai's love is Kevala. You know, a devotee doesn't, she's not thinking of Krishna in mood of reverence. She's thinking of Krishna as her child. In fact, we see there are such intimate pastimes at the level of Kevala that sometimes Nanda Maharaja Yashoda Mai, they bless Krishna. What do they do? When Krishna comes and does some service, they say, very good, very good, and they bless him. And not only that, they ask, like Nanda Maharaja sometimes ask Krishna to carry his sandals, and Krishna puts his sandals on his head. Now, from a normal point of view, you know, our footwear is considered contaminated, and it can't even come inside the temple. We keep it right outside the temple when we go inside the temple. Then, the footwear is meant to keep outside, even from the temple premises. What to speak of the altar premises? In the temple, the place where the deities is the altar. And then what to speak of the footwear going near the deities? And what to speak of the footwear going on top of the deities? It's for a person who has some understanding of the nature and rules of deity worship, it's a scandalous thought, you know, to take the footwear and let it come anywhere, even in the altar, what to speak of, to touch the deity's head. But that is what Nanda Maharaj is doing, basically. And he's not only doing it, he's asking Krishna to do it. Get my sandals. And Krishna puts on his head and gets it. So how are they able to do it? Because their prema is kevala. It's pure love. There is no awareness of Krishna's divinity, Krishna's supremacy. They think that Krishna is not God. They think, oh, Krishna is just one of our such a lovable, special Rajvasi. And even when they see Krishna's extraordinary power, when Krishna does something extraordinary, if he lifts Govardhan or something like that, at that time there may be a temporary awareness, oh, this Krishna must be God. But then afterwards, they don't think of him as God. That awareness gets covered over. Just like in the daytime also, stars are there. But those stars are not visible in the daytime because the sun is so bright. The stars are like the awareness of Krishna's greatness. And the sun for the Vrajvasis is like the awareness of Krishna's sweetness, awareness of Krishna, their love for Krishna basically. without an awareness of his position. So because their love for Krishna is so great, that because of their love for Krishna, they don't care at all for Krishna's divinity, Krishna's greatness. They think that Krishna is just one among us. And as we have discussed earlier, the people pray to God, Vrajavasis pray for God. They pray for God. So they don't think Krishna is God. They think, oh, Lord Narayan is protecting Krishna. Nanda Maharaj does worship of Narayan, and because of his piety in worshipping Narayan diligently, Narayan is blessing him and Narayan is protecting Krishna. And how is Narayan protecting? And when the demons come, at that time Narayan enters into Krishna. And Narayan gives Krishna a lot of power, and that's how Krishna is able to do miraculous things. So the Brajvasis, their love is kevala. They don't care for anything except loving Krishna. Not for, even for Krishna's supreme position. And this kevala prema is the perfection of life. It is not the perfection of life, it is the perfection of all of existence in terms of the relationship of the devotee and the Lord. The idea that God will subordinate himself and that the devotee will become greater than the Lord itself is extraordinary. So we see in the Damodarashtakam, so first and second stanza of Damodarashtakam describe the pastime. In the Mameshwaram, there it concludes with that the Yashodamai has tied Krishna, and then after that is Rudantam Muhur Netram, that Krishna is crying. And then the third stanza describes what is being demonstrated by this. This pastime demonstrates the contrast between Mahatmya, we could say with the terminology of Bhaktisiddhanta Sindhu, Mahatmya Jnana Prem and Kevala Prem. Iti Druk Svalila Bhirananda Kunde Saghosham Nimajantam Akhyapayantam Tadiye Shitageshu Bhakte Chitatvam Puna Prema Tastam Shatavrti Vande. So, Iti Druk. Yes, Iti Druk. By letting the world see this, Svalila Bhir, one's own pastimes. Ananda Kunde. We have heard about Radha Kunda, Shama Kunda. Here it is Ananda Kunda. It's a lake of happiness. Ananda Kunde, Svaghosham Nimajantam Akhyapayantam. So he is declaring, by just drowning his beloved Vrajavasis in the ocean of happiness through pastimes like this, what is he declaring? Tadiye Shitageshu Bhaktair Jitatvam. Tadiye Shitageshu. Tadiye Shitageshu means that those who are geshu, those who are aware of, those who have jnana of his greatness, that those who are aware that, oh, God is so great that we have to bow down to him, we have to worship him with great diligence and rules. So they are telling them that, okay, that's all fine, but that sort of love will not win the Lord over the way Yashodamai has won the Lord over. And that is possible by Bhaktair Jitatvam. That is possible only by Bhakti. Puna Prematastam Shatavrati Vande. Puna Prematastam. So again, with love, I offer obeisances. And this love is so extraordinary. Shatavrati Vande. So Sanatana Goswami has written a commentary on the Damodarashtakam, his Digdarshinitika, and there he explains that this Shatavrati Vande, although he's saying I offer hundreds of obeisances to you, this is actually not in the mood of awe and reverence. This is due to the spontaneity of love that is flooding the heart of Rupa Goswami, that he is offering this kind of prayer. This pastime contrasts love in reverence and pure love. Aishwarya Gyan Prema and Mahatmya. Mahatmya Gyan Prema and Kevala Prema. So the contrast between the two is that in Mahatmya Gyan Prema, one is more, the relationship with Krishna is not so close. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita also, it is said that there is Aishwarya Shithila Prema. That when there is Aishwarya, when there is awareness of Aishwarya, awareness of greatness, and that makes the prema a little bit shithil. Shithil means it is not so alive, not so energetic. It becomes a little passive, little cold. Aishwarya shithil. So if you want the vibrant love, then Aishwarya Gyan has to be covered, and that's what Krishna does. So Krishna has his Yogamaya in the spiritual world, and through Yogamaya, he covers the devotees. But the devotees have such a great exalted level of love that they get covered. So we shouldn't think that just because Yogamaya is there, so the devotees are covered. No, the devotees themselves have that desire to serve Krishna with such intensity and purity that Yogamaya acts on them. And then Yogamaya covers. So Yogamaya does in and of itself is not alone responsible. The devotee's purity and intensity of love is also responsible. And together this miracle happens where the devotee remembers God and forgets his godhood. The devotee, what happens? Remembers God but forgets his godhood. See, when we are in Mahamaya, we forget God and we forget his godhood. Then when we come out of Mahamaya, what happens is we try to remember God and his godhood. And that means his godhood means his position as God. And then when we go into Yogamaya, at that time we remember God but we forget his godhood. So his godhood means his supremacy. So initially for us, when we have an independent enjoying mentality, it is good to remember Krishna is not an ordinary person. Krishna is God. And many people, in one sense, if people are born in, say, a pious sort of culture, say people are born in India, in one sense they know about Krishna. Yeah, but they don't really know Krishna. They don't know Tattvataha, they don't know Krishna. So they may know God without his godhood. But their knowing God without his godhood, so the nominally religious people, they know God without his godhood, and the Vrajavasis know God without his godhood. The sadhakas have to know God with his godhood. So that means if you consider three levels, the nominally religious people, they know God without his godhood. Krishna, yes, we know. He is a Hindu god, and people used to steal butter, used to dance with the gopis. We know about Krishna, that's what they think. But they don't really know Tattvataha, they don't know really anything about Krishna. So their knowledge is very superficial. So their idea of knowing God without his godhood is they have to come to know about his godhood. They have to know about his greatness, his position, his power. And that's what sadhana bhakti is primarily about. That is, we come to know about God and his godhood, his supremacy. But as the knowledge of his godhood becomes richer and deeper, then also we come to know about God in the intimate aspect. And there is, what is that? There God conceals his godhood. And then there is love. The people know God without his godhood again. But then when they know, Vrajavasis know people know God without his godhood, what is the difference between them and the nominally religious people? The difference is that the Vrajavasis have intense love for Krishna, whereas the nominally religious people have no love for Krishna. So that love is what is a defining characteristic of the Vrajavasis. So they have knowledge of God without knowledge of his godhood. And that makes it a very, very special kind of love. Special kind of love. That is the love which in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition we are being offered. So by practicing Krishna consciousness, by following the process of bhakti that our acharyas have given us based on our Gaudiya Shastras and the Vedic scriptures in general, we will ultimately attain this kind of exalted love. So then here we see that Rupa Goswami describes the progression. Now we have talked about this progression in an implicit way earlier also, and most of us know about it. This came earlier. Adau Shraddha Ta Sadhu Sangha Tabhajana Kriya Thanartha Nivritti Syat Ta Nishta Ruchistata Athasakti Sato Bhava Tata Prema Vidanchati Sadhakana Mayam Premna Pradur Bhave Bhavet Kramaha. So sadhakana ayam premnaha, this prema, the line suggests shraddha, sadhu sangha, bhajan kriya, anarthaniyuti is 4th, nishtha 5, ruchi, asakti, ruchi is 6, asakti is 7, bhav is 8 and prema is 9. So this ayam premnaha, how will one come to that? Pradur bhave bhavet kramaha, progressively one will come to that. And then it's important to understand that we cannot use we can understand prema by externals. In another Pancharatra, Lord Shiva tells Parvati, my dear Supreme Goddess, you may know from me that anyone who has developed the ecstasy of love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and who is always merged in transcendental bliss on account of this love cannot even perceive the material distress or happiness coming from the body or mind. Now, what is the need for making a point like this? You say, yes, somebody is on a transcendental level, that person is transcendental, so doesn't experience anything with the body or the mind. But this is for our understanding. Generally, when we want to understand somebody, we look at the person and we see how big is the smile on the face of the person, how happy this person is. And based on that, we think, oh, this person is happy. We look at the external expression, and based on that, we try to think how happy the person is. But this standard cannot work for a devotee in prema. At one time, a devotee had clicked a photograph of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was seeing the photo. And a devotee said, Prabhupada, you look so grave in this photo. So Prabhupada said, that was a moment of ecstasy. A devotee said, there's no smile, it is so grave. How can it be a moment of ecstasy? So Prabhupada said that actually ecstasy is not just dependent on the external smile on our face. Ecstasy is dependent on our inner remembrance of Krishna. To the extent we are remembering Krishna, to that extent we are ecstatic. So that is the primary characteristic of ecstasy, that we are absorbed in remembrance of Krishna. And when we are thus absorbed in the remembrance of Krishna, then we don't need anything else. Completely satisfied. And sometimes that remembrance in Krishna may lead to external crying. So if we look at the life of the gopis after Krishna left Vrindavan, they are constantly crying in separation from Krishna. And we may say, what is this? I want to love Krishna, and by loving Krishna I thought I'll become happy. But the topmost devotees of Krishna, what are they doing? They're crying constantly. So, as it is, I was crying in the material world. Do I have to go through following all the regulative principles of bhakti and then do so much sadhana, and then what is the perfection? That you cry for the rest of eternity. No. There is a very peripheral, superficial understanding. The gopis may be crying, but even their crying is filled with ecstasy. Because what brings ecstasy, what is the central aspect of spiritual happiness, is not whether I am smiling or whether I am crying. The central aspect of spiritual happiness is that I am remembering Krishna. If I am remembering Krishna, that remembrance of Krishna itself is the source of happiness. Sukhataram aparam na jatu jane haricharan smaranamrutena tulyam sukhataram aparam na jatu jane. That actually, Kulshekhar Maharaj is saying in Mukundala Stotra, that I don't know of any happiness other than the happiness of remembrance of Krishna. There is nothing like that. It's such a great happiness. So when I am remembering Krishna, we shouldn't think of remembrance of Krishna as, say, maybe we saw some sunrise long ago, it was a very beautiful sight. So I remember the sunrise and feel, oh, it's so beautiful. And feel some satisfaction. So I think remembrance of Krishna is like that. Oh, I remember the sunrise, so I remember Krishna, like that. No, it is not like that, because the sun is basically a passive object, at least to our vision. Just thinking of sun, okay, it was there and it moved up. But Krishna is a living, loving person. And our relationship with Krishna is constantly evolving. And because it is evolving, so depending on whether we are feeling the presence of Krishna or feeling the absence of Krishna, whether Krishna is with us or Krishna is away from us, the mode of emotions will change. The mode of emotions will change means that if Krishna is away from us, we'll feel the separation. And that separation, there will be agony. But although there is agony, underlying that agony is intense remembrance of Krishna. And because there is intense remembrance of Krishna, there is ecstasy. So we can't judge whether a devotee is at prema or not by externals. Devotees are happy because they are remembering Krishna. But sometimes the remembrance of Krishna, because it is not just a passive remembrance on a passive object, It is active remembrance on a supremely active object. That is Krishna. So therefore, actually this remembrance can take on various forms. Now Prabhupada may sometimes be angry. He may sometimes be in great anxiety. And if some devotees make some mistake when the devotees they were supposed to inaugurate the temple in Ramanraiti, in Vrindavan at a particular time, but they had not completed the work only. And Prabhupada came to Vrindavan for the inauguration of the temple, and Prabhupada said, where the temple was supposed to be, it was simply a construction site. Prabhupada, what is this? How can you inaugurate a temple? Then the devotees just couldn't speak. Prabhupada was furious. But then that anger was not material. In that he was remembering Krishna, and he was thinking, oh Krishna, I was going to offer you a temple and this temple is not ready. So Prabhupada, there was the sadness in Prabhupada's heart because of that. So there was intense remembrance of Krishna. So even if there is fury externally, that's based on internal remembrance of Krishna. Or sometimes the devotee may be in great anxiety over something. I mean, Prabhupada had sent Tamal Krishna Maharaj to get land for Mayapur, and he did not come for several days, and Prabhupada had given him a lot of money to settle the deal, and Prabhupada was apprehensive, did the land come or not. At night he could not sleep, he could not do his translation and commenting. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj came late in the night, and Prabhupada immediately saw him and said, yes, the land is yours. And Prabhupada was relieved, was very happy. So now, this is not a material emotion, this is all spiritual, because it's all for the service of Krishna. So then, if that is the case, then how can we know who is the advanced devotee? Well, it takes one to know one. We cannot know precisely who is how advanced. But earlier we discussed about non-imitable characteristics. Avyartha kalatvam, then virakti, then ashabaddha. We see over there, in those characteristics, he does not put happiness as one of the characteristics. And Namagani Sadaruchi is there, Samutkantha is there, Prithitavastisthala is there, that constantly chanting the holy name of the Lord, wanting to be in the holy places, and eagerness to just connect with the Lord, all these are there. But just Ananda is not there as one of the characteristics, because that can be faked. Somebody can just put a plastic smile on the face. In fact, that's what in most offices, secretaries and salespeople are trained to put on a plastic smile on their face. So, somebody wants to sell a toothpaste. You know, they will have a big smile on their face where they will be showing their tooth. That is not a sign of happiness. So we can't just depend on external symptoms of whether a person is smiling or not to indicate how advanced is, or whether the person is at the level of prema. All we have to say is how dedicated a person is to the service of the Lord. And with those characters you can understand. And we see from those characters' point of view, Prabhupada was utterly dedicated to the service of Krishna. And it is by Srila Prabhupada's mercy that we come to know about the exaltedness of bhakti and the pathway to attain that exaltedness. So this Bhakti Shastri course which we have done is our service to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada wrote all his books, and it is not just his books. He is giving us the message of Krishna as has been explained by many acharyas throughout the history, and as Prabhupada has presented, so that it is relevant to all of us. And when we study it, we are basically receiving Srila Prabhupada's mercy and letting that mercy enter into our heart. So when it goes through our head and enters into our heart, it will enter deeper, because we will be intellectually convinced about what we are doing. So a quick recap of the journey that we have traced. We started our course with Ishopanishad. So in Ishopanishad, basically the focus is on understanding the inconceivable position of Ishvara and how he is alone is the object of worship. And in the there are some indications of bhakti over there, although that is not the focus of the Ishopanishad. So Ishopanishad basically, you know, ultimately if you want to look at spiritual life or in any path, we need to know sadhya and sadhana. What is the goal and what is the means? So these four books enable us to understand the sadhya and sadhana systematically. So Ishopanishad points to the sadhya. It points that there is an Ishvara with whom we have to harmonize, and we should not get distracted to material progress, to demigod worship, to impersonal aspect, but we focus on the personal form of the absolute. And there is some indication of bhakti. We are praying to that absolute. Please remove the effulgence that is covering your real face. And please remove the obstacles because of my past sins, because of which I am not able to come close to you. And please guide me back to you. So there is an indication of bhakti over there, and there is an indication that God is, that the absolute truth is personal. So that was what we discussed in Ishopanishad. Then when we came to Upadeshamrit, what was the focus there? It was, okay, a knowledge about God is not just theoretical, it has to be transformational. So what is it? What is the process for transformation? That is Bhakti Yoga. And how Bhakti Yoga is to be practiced, that is the essence of the discussion of the architect of instruction. So there we discussed about how identifying who is a guru, what are the, and then based on the guru's guidance we learn, okay, there are things which are favorable to bhakti which we should cultivate, which are unfavorable to bhakti which we should not do. And then the most important among the elements is avoiding bad association, and more positively having good association. Then how to associate with devotees, the sixfold loving exchanges, and how to associate with senior, junior, equal devotees. Then how to not have an offensive mentality while seeing devotees. And then we move forward and how to practice bhakti more and more deeply in the mood of Raja, and ultimately how to attain Radha Kunda, which is the most exalted level of, which is the arena of the practice of the most exalted level of love. So that was, so through Ishopanishad we understand Bhagawan, that the Ishvara is Bhagawan, is personal. And then through Nectar of Instruction we understand how bhakti is to be practiced. Then in Bhagavad Gita, it's a huge field that is discussed. So essentially what happens in Bhagavad Gita is that the various paths are discussed. So Karma Yoga is analyzed as compared to Jnana Yoga in the first six chapters, and Karma Yoga is declared to be superior. And then in the sixth chapter describes how Karma Yoga through Jnana Yoga will lead to bhakti. And then in the middle six chapters, bhakti is glorified. In the last six chapters, again, from Jnana Yoga to Bhakti Yoga, it is described. So, what does the Bhagavad Gita do? Bhagavad Gita establishes, after comparing various paths, this kind of comparison has not been done in earlier books, compares various paths and establishes how bhakti is supreme, and bhakti is a supreme sadhana, and Bhagavan is a supreme sadhya. So, the impersonal conception, the demigods, all these things are analyzed, and they are shown to be as subordinate realities. Now, after this has been conclusively demonstrated, that Bhagavan and Bhakti are the supreme sadhya and sadhana, then we want to know more about how to practice Bhakti. And that has been the discussion of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the exaltedness of Bhakti is talked about in terms of the six characteristics of pure devotional service. And then how to practice Bhakti is elaborately talked about in 64 elements. And then, if a traveler is to go on a long journey, you know, sometimes if you have to go on a long, long journey, then maybe there are pictures of the destination which are shown. Somebody has to go, say, by early time, there's no plane, so you have to go by ship. You have to travel for 3 months. And then you show there is some very beautiful island with beautiful scenery and beaches and very scenic everything. And you see the pictures. Oh, this is so attractive. I want to go there. No matter how much trouble is there, I'll go there. So like that, the pathway is delineated. And then when we look at Bhava Bhakti and Prem Bhakti as it described, it is, you are getting glimpses of how ecstatic love is, how love for Krishna is, and those glimpses inspire us. Yes, no matter how difficult, how forbidding this journey is, I want to go along this journey. And Srila Prabhupada has given us the community of devotees as our protection, as our motivator, and as our facility, as our guide in moving onwards in this devotional journey. And by Krishna's mercy, by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, we will be able to go through this journey and ultimately attain life's supreme perfection. So thank all of you for joining us on this journey of the Bhakti Shastri course. It's a small step forward which will deepen our conviction and inspiration to accept the gift that Lord Srila Prabhupada has given us. And during these discussions, if by my harsh speech I have spoken anything which has hurt any devotees, I seek forgiveness for that. Vancha kalpatrubhyascha kripa sindhubhyeva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Srila Bhakti Shastri Bhakti Vrinda ki jai. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.